Hi, this is Chris Evans with another Storage Unpack podcast. I'm at Pure Accelerate in San Francisco, and I'm with Rob Lee. Now, Rob, I don't know what your official job title is, but you work on the FlashBlade product.
That's right. I'm the chief architect here at Pure for focusing on the FlashBlade product.
Okay, brilliant. So it's been an interesting week. Obviously, we're on the third day for me, second day of the main conference, and we've seen a lot of new FlashBlade announcements. Do you want to summarize them, talk us through what they are, and we can maybe discuss what they are?
Sure, yeah. So we've announced a number of features coming out in what we're calling Purity for FlashBlade 2.0, and probably the two biggest headline features that we're really focusing a lot of emphasis on are building out the scale of FlashBlade to be bigger and faster. So we're second half of this year going to be able to scale FlashBlade both in terms of capacity and performance to about 5x of what it is today. And so just to put that in perspective, you know, we can go now from a single 4U chassis all the way up to five chassis interconnected with one another, covering the entire kind of capacity range between about 30 terabytes usable to about 8 petabytes with some data reduction in about a half rack's worth of form factor. And more importantly, we can do that while linearly pushing performance out. So we're seeing systems in the labs, you know, we looked at a demo the other day, seeing systems in the labs pushing about north of 80 gigabytes a second of bandwidth out of the systems.
Right.
So that's kind of the big first feature we're talking about. The second one is an introduction of a native object store interface. So it's an S3 compliant interface.
Yep.
So we're really looking at these two headline features to help us better address some of the, you know, really data-hungry, data-starved kind of analytics workloads, as well as some of the cloud-native apps. And then we also have a number of other features we're rolling out, actually starting last quarter and kind of following that into the next quarter to help us better address a lot of the general purpose kind of enterprise workloads. So this is, you know, everything from NLM support, IPv6, LDAP, snapshots, you know, there's a whole host of, you know, kind of more mainstream enterprise workload features.
Right. So looking back at the hardware itself, first of all, just to set a bit of scene for people, the initial platform that you announced last year was 4U box that took up to 15 blades, and they were connected by a backplane at the back that was Ethernet based?
That's correct, yeah. So what we've done, just to take a step back, what we've done is moved away from that kind of traditional discrete controller drive shelf architecture. The entire hardware platform is built around a single element, which is a blade. You can put up to 15 of them in a single four rack unit chassis. And the blades have two Ethernet, essentially 2x10 gigabit Ethernet connectors in the back of each blade. The blades then plug into a midplane. And what we've done is on the back of the chassis, we've also integrated essentially two network switches in the back that provide Ethernet connectivity between the blades as well as up to the client network.
Yeah, so now this time around, 2.0 takes five of those up to and actually connects them together. So you get, instead of 15 blades in a single chassis, you now get 5 times 15 blades, 75 blades potentially in a configuration.
That's correct. So as we push beyond that single chassis form factor, we'll be interconnecting the multiple chassis through what we're calling an external fabric module, or you can think of it as a kind of a logical extension of our integrated switching tier that allow us to connect up to 75 blades together.
Right.
We'll be moving that external fabric module up to 100 gigabit based networking. So we'll be able to push up to 800 gig ports out to the client network per external fabric module. There's two of them for, you know, HA.
Yep, of course.
So in aggregate, you're looking at quite a bit of bandwidth north-south, about 1.6 terabits a second.
Yeah, which is a huge amount. And obviously, that's a great definition of speeds and feeds. And obviously, I think you've done some performance stuff that's up the IOPS, like triple the number of IOPS. Or is it more than that?
Yeah,
am I underselling it?
Yeah, so we've thrown a lot of numbers out this week. You know, since we launched last year, I think when we came to launch at Accelerate last year, we were talking about in the range of about 500,000 IOPS, about 14-15 gigabytes a second bandwidth out of a single chassis. Throughout the course of the year, actually, and mostly software improvements, we were able to bring that number up to north of 1.5 million. That really was looking at just how applications are actually generating workloads.
Right.
That was working very closely with a lot of our EDA customers, a lot of our customers in the oil and gas space that were doing ground sonar simulation. You know, and as we were working with them and looking at the performance profiles, you know, it became clear just in the nature of how the clients, the NFS clients, are issuing IOs and serializing those accesses. We found a number of software improvements that we can make.
Right.
So over the course of the year, we pushed kind of the IOPS performance within the single chassis system, mostly through software work, about 3x.
Okay.
And now as we interconnect chassis, we're seeing a very linear build out on a per blade basis of that performance.
So that's a really interesting angle, I think, the fact that you produce the hardware platform, great, but until you get in the field and start talking to customers, you can't see... Well, you can, but not to the degree you might want. You can't see how to optimize it en masse to make it actually fit the workload. And to get three times the improvement out purely because you've put work into the software seems like an amazing sort of step up.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's interesting because it's very natural to key in on and really focus on the hardware speeds and feeds.
Yeah.
You know, at Pure, you know, we have a philosophy of looking at the hardware as really an enabler, and the software is actually what's driving the performance and all the other qualities you want to get out of the system.
Right, yeah.
You know, certainly you need the hardware to be able to support it, but if we look at, you know, this particular case within FlashBlade, you know, we built the hardware platform knowing that, you know, it's hard to rev that, right? It takes a while. So you want to make sure that you've got plenty of, you know, just physics, right? Plenty of speeds and feeds that the, you know, networking is going to support, that, you know, your PCI bandwidth, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, our system is CPU bottlenecked, right? Which is exactly where you want a scale-out system to be.
Yep, of course.
Because that's the element that you can add more of. And if you have a well-designed scale-out system that, you know, is free of bottlenecks and is, you know, where you have a software structure that allows you to really linearly build that out, that's exactly where you want the bottleneck in the system to be, because then you can make very, very quick software improvements to...
Yep.
You know, essentially shave down how much CPU you're using to do the same amount of effective work for the application.
Right. And I mean, that's great in terms of, you know, what the technology is and hardware-wise and where you've got it to. What's probably more interesting is what customers are doing with it.
Yeah.
So are there any good customer use cases you can highlight? Because I think when we looked at the platform coming out last year, it was easy to think, great concept, but a lot of people were going, but what actually will people do with it? You know, what is the sort of the opportunity that people have seen that are doing things they probably couldn't have done otherwise?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll start kind of at the top end of the scale in terms of what's traditionally been referred to or thought of as HPC.
Right.
So we have a lot of customers in the EDA space, for example, that this is the chip design space where the guys kind of making, you know, silicon, and you know, they've got kind of a classic problem where, you know, every time a chip designer makes a change and they want to, you know, relay it out and run synthesis and simulation, that's a very compute intensive task. And so what ends up happening is they build up these massive compute farms, right?
Okay.
You know, thousands and thousands of cores, split those jobs up and run them. But in order to feed those jobs, they end up having to move tremendous amounts of data north, you know, kind of to and from these nodes.
Yeah.
And just give you a sense of what this data looks like. You know, a typical job may be, you know, a couple hundred gigabytes, let's say 300 gigabytes worth of data. You know, 280, 290 gigabytes of data, that payload may reside in three or four files. And the rest of it may be spread over, like, you know, 5-10 million files. So you've got a very, very, you know, wide, disparate workload.
Very unbalanced.
Very unbalanced. And so that's where we've really shined, right? Being able to deal with very, very large IOs and streaming kind of file transfers, as well as handle the small metadata very quickly. And so, you know, we had, I remember very clearly, I was meeting an early alpha customer, became a beta customer, now they're with us in production. And I was meeting the CIO of this chip designer, actually I was meeting the VP of IT, and you know, one of our early conversations, he said to me, look, you know, we have a compute farm of about 3,000 cores, and this allows us to work on one, maybe one and a half projects at a time. I have a mandate from the CIO to triple that next year, because the business is demanding more production, more efficiency from our developers. And he looked at me and said, I don't have a way to do that. My existing storage platform cannot keep these
physically can't deliver right. that. Yeah.
So I can buy more computers, I can network them together, like that's easy. But the storage platform hasn't been able to keep it fed.
Right.
And so we see that same pattern playing out in the EDA space as well as in oil and gas and all kinds of other.
So who was the guy? There was a guy. Introduced me to yesterday. His first name is Jim. And
Jim Dolan.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that was an interesting scenario.
Yeah. So Jim is from an oil and gas customer down in Houston.
So he's seismic. Is that right? Is it seismic?
Yeah. Yeah. So they're from. Yeah. They're basically looking at seismic data. Right. So essentially ground sonar data. And they're running a whole bunch of simulations over decades and decades worth of data to
right.
basically figure out where to drill, right? And this is actually a great example of a trend we're seeing across the broader industries, which is that more and more organizations are realizing they've got tremendous sums of data they've amassed over the years. They're paying to store it, and they're now seeing better ways of actually extracting the value.
They're getting to do something with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're kind of now trying to go back and reanalyze data from the past. And so that was a really fascinating example where they had, I believe, built out about 20, somewhere between 20 to 24 racks of NetApp to drive these simulations. And it wasn't for capacity. It was just to get parallelism, to get controller
right, yeah.
count, head count. I think it was something like north of 10, 12,000 spindles that they had in there. And we were able to take that down to, I think, 4 rack units, or maybe it was 2 chassis, but it was a considerable footprint reduction.
Yeah.
And when you look at consolidation at that scale, it's like now with all of that space savings and OPEX savings, it's like what more can the business do? How much more
yeah.
Simulation runs can you do? I think another great area where you have similar pattern playing out is in kind of statistical simulations, so like Monte Carlo simulations.
Right. Yeah.
And so we're working with. Customers that are in the business of building, if you look at how people build planes, trains, automobiles, it's all very similar. There's a lot of Monte Carlo simulation that's done there, and that's where statistically, the more simulation runs you can do, the better
the
results
better you get.
Exactly.
Towards, yeah, you trend towards a better answer each time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so at the high end of the scale, there's a lot of places where we're really enabling people to extract value out of data they couldn't get to before, or couldn't meaningfully get to in any kind of
yeah.
reasonable time span. Get much, much more refined and much more accurate results or insights from their data. But at the same time, one of the things that's really surprised us is that aside from the top line performance, we're getting pulled into a lot of deployments and use cases where they don't have a single workload that's really pushing, 16, 17, 18 gigabytes a second of bandwidth.
Yeah.
But people, may have 5 or 6 disparate arrays
right.
that built up over time, each for one particular workload.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And, being afraid of QoS and being afraid of, isolation or lack of isolation, one workload affecting another, you end up with building up silos of arrays in your data center. And we've gotten pulled into a lot of workloads where just the density, the simplicity, and not having to worry about workload consolidation, being able to handle a wide variety of I/O patterns and so on and so forth, has driven a lot of consolidation. A lot of people are looking at the TCO and just looking at, hey, I can collapse all of this other infrastructure onto a much smaller, easier to manage array.
Yeah. So there's all of that benefit. But I think a lot of it is also the fact that people are doing things they physically just couldn't do before,
yep.
which is, because you see lots of things where companies say, hey, we took all of this legacy stuff and we collapsed it down to one array, and you think, well, yeah, it's legacy. It's been in there for 5
yep.
years, things move on. But being able to do something you couldn't do before, I think, is the thing for me that this week I think I've seen more and thought, that's the value is,
yep.
it's good to replace, but being able to do something you couldn't do,
yep.
that's really critical.
Yeah, spent the afternoon in our investor day session yesterday, and Matt Harris from Mercedes was on the customer panel, and he was relaying a story. So they've been using FlashArray and FlashBlade.
So I understand, yeah.
And he was relaying that they've been running CFD, some computational fluid dynamics simulations on the FlashBlade. And they have a really interesting case where, the Formula One organization regulates, it's amazing, they actually regulate, audit the teraflops that are used.
So you can't have more performance than somebody else.
Yeah, so each team is limited each season to a certain number of teraflops. Because it's funny because they don't want it to turn into a technological arms race. Cool. But it already is. And so as a result, idle CPU cycles literally cost them. They cannot buy them, right? And so, you know, he's relaying the fact that, you know, by moving some of these CFD workloads onto FlashBlade, you know, they're able to speed up some of the simulations by 25%.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm trying to paraphrase a little bit. And I'm sure the transcript's online somewhere, but to paraphrase a little bit, you know, he said, look, you know, we spend millions going after 1%, 2%. You know, in the world of F1, like, you cannot buy, like, money cannot buy 25%. Like, you just cannot
do it.
So I think that's a really good example.
Yeah. So now, obviously, that was the initial implementation last year was all file. Now you're talking about moving towards object.
Yep.
Where do you see the opportunities there? Because object, I think, is an interesting one from my perspective, in that you see HPC stuff like DDN and companies like that, but most of it tends to be cheap and deep rather than performance object. So do you think there's a market for performance object that hasn't been tapped yet?
Yeah, no, I absolutely do. I mean, I think...
I should just mention, in case there's a lot of background noise, and we'll find out when I play this back, that we are actually sitting behind the main stage at the moment, and they're rehearsing for today. So if there's a bit of noise in the background, that's what it is.
So, all right, I'll try to speak up a little, Chris.
Yeah.
I think there absolutely is a market for performance object. I think it doesn't necessarily materialize just yet. But it's pretty clear to us talking to, you know, even our existing kind of early beta customers that, you know, there's a lot of workloads where there's a lot of applications where they're really looking at the object interface as the new primary storage.
Right? Okay.
Like, this is how they're building their applications. Frankly, this is, you know, the language that the developers they're hiring speak, and for, in a lot of ways, for the agility these applications need, it is it is the kind of best choice interface. I think historically people haven't had a lot of options, and so in many ways you've been forced to constrain and limit how you design applications, how you think about building object applications around the existing technology.
Yeah.
And so in many ways we look at this as a bit of a chicken and egg. I mean, you can think of it this way, right? You know, if you remember back to the days of dial-up internet and modems, right? You know, you could make a case, well, you know, is there a need for high-speed internet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but you have Netflix and you have, you know, streaming video, and now you kind of have this, you know, one wouldn't develop without the other kind of thing, right? And so, you know, we see already a lot of demand for people that are on object applications in public clouds or in their private clouds, where the applications are suffering from performance, more so on the latency side than bandwidth.
Yes, I was going to say, I'd agree with that, yeah.
But, you know, performance nonetheless. And I think people are just looking for more options, right? People are looking for options to where, you know, applications have grown up in the public cloud, and now they want a bit more optionality in terms of how much of this data set, how much of the kind of working application do I want in a public cloud, how much do I want it in a private cloud, in a hybrid deployment. And so we see, our initial offering is extremely high performance, and then we're going to build it out to include just better kind of integration to other S3 endpoints, be it other flash blades, other private public clouds. We want to place FlashBlade, into the market as a high performance offering, to at the end of the day, give customers the flexibility to decide what environment to deploy parts of their application in, based on performance and cost and economics, and not based on, you know, just being constrained by the options that are out there.
Yeah, fair enough. So when are all of the new features coming out? When is 2.0 available?
So 2.0, we're really looking at 2.0 as a series of releases, right?
Okay.
We're trying to be very, 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 very agile about pushing releases out, and a lot of that has to do with our ability to very quickly upgrade customers non-disruptively. So the initial versions of 2.0, our naming scheme is essentially major-minor.
Okay.
So we've got 2.0.1, 2.0.2, so on and so forth. So I think we just released 2.0.4, right? So the existing first four releases have already come out, and that's shipped SMB, LDAP, NLM, believe HTTP is in 2.04, you'll see us continue to roll out 2.0 kind of X releases throughout the next quarter or so. Turning your attention to kind of some of the bigger picture items, we've got snapshots is definitely a huge one that's coming in the 2.0 release line, and so we're targeting that one for sometime this quarter. And then Object is in the late stages of beta, so we're looking at that one coming out. Actually, I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit I don't remember if it was in 2.04 or if it's coming out in the next, kind of.
I wouldn't worry about
weeks.
It. We can always add this in by the time we edit it up and put a link for people to see.
But that's imminently coming out in the next couple of weeks. And then multi-chassis, or kind of our blade scale, is targeted for the back half of this year.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks for spending the time and talking through the details. And I look forward to coming back and talking about FlashBlade 3.0 next year.
No, thank you. It's great to catch up.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Yeah.